Hey, welcome to the Gig Life Podcast. I'm your host, Stevie Taylor. Hope you're doing well. My guest today is Carlos Adura. Carlos plays drums for Tim Finn, The Strides, Skunk Hour, The Tambourine Girls, Mr. Ott, and many more. Carlos was in town for rehearsals with Tim Finn for Blues Fest, so we met up in a park in Sydney's entertainment quarter for a bit of a chat. There's lots of goodness here, eh? So I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode 146, Carlos Adura. Here we go. I think we're rolling. Carlos Adura.
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 Adura. In Spanish, Adura.
Is there any others?
No, I don't think so.
We nailed it.
I've got a lot of nicknames. I was just thinking of all silly nicknames.
Like, so your first name, Carlos. So I know a few Carloses, and a couple of them, they shorten their names to Los.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Have you ever been lost?
No, I've never been lost.
Okay.
Or car.
Yeah, okay.
Or lost car.
I would never.
I have lost my car.
You
once.
Lost your car? Really?
I literally suffered from car loss at one night.
Ooh.
And, there was this, it was in Bondi, like playing a gig, and one of the streets just looked identical to the street where I parked, but it wasn't that one. And it was like, I had to get in a taxi and drive around to look for my car.
Were you far away?
No, I was like 3 minutes, like not even like, it was like 50 meters away.
Right.
But it just looked, the whole, yeah, it was just funny.
There was one time we used to go clubbing a lot back in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s. And we went into town one night and parked the car somewhere, and I could not find the car, and I was in no state to drive the car, but I didn't know where the car was, so I ended up finding my way back home via bus and River Cat and all that sort of stuff. This is when I was living at Castle Hill.
Yeah, right.
And apparently the car was in the lane right next to where we were hanging out, and my brother had fallen asleep in there, so when he woke up he drove home.
That's great.
I know, right?
That's awesome.
But I never even thought to look in the lane next to where we were.
Man, when you said that, it reminded me, man, back, when, man, the Lebbies used to rule the nightclubs back in the time. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was real clubbing days.
Yeah, it was.
Those were some hectic days.
Hectic days.
Yeah.
Hectic, heady, stupid.
Totally.
Yeah.
Fun,
right,
though.
We're here at the entertainment quarter in Moore Park in Sydney, for people that don't know where that is. That's where Fox Studios used to be, and they used to make movies here. And but I think those lots are all closed up now, haven't they? I don't think they make movies here anymore. But we are here because you are, I'll backtrack a little bit. You grew up in Sydney and you lived in Sydney until 2022, you said?
Yep.
But you've moved up to Fingal Heads.
That's right.
So you're back in town because you're currently touring with Tim Finn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we're here because you're rehearsing here, right?
That's right. Mm. Yeah. So, we've been rehearsing for a couple of days. We've got one more day of rehearsal. And then we're going to do a gig at the Factory Theatre on Saturday.
Yep.
And then we're going to do Blues Fest on Monday.
That's cool.
Yeah. So looking forward to that.
So which stage at Blues Fest?
I think it's the Crossroads. I think it's the main one. Okay. But we're the final act on that stage on the Monday.
Okay.
So we're just going to miss the whole festival, unfortunately.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to get to see any acts. But maybe one act or something after it or something.
Yeah, okay.
But,
right.
Yeah, I guess everyone else is, maybe, you know. Yeah, we're just sort of finishing it off, I guess.
Yeah, but, right.
Yeah, still,
so you don't get there early to check it out, or you just it's in and out?
We're gonna go. Yeah, we'll get there like at 4:30. Apparently, that's the time that we're getting there, which is an hour and a half before. So not much time at all.
Okay.
And then by then, you know, you just want to warm up and sort of just, you know, anticipate the gig. And
is this by design from Tim because he just wants to?
No. At the times we've played and we've, you know, different days, like we've played earlier days and stuff.
Okay.
I think this is my third blues fest with Tim.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So how long have you been playing with Tim now?
On and off for about 14, 15 years.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
It's been a long time, yeah. I didn't realize that until I saw an old YouTube clip of one of the first few gigs that I did with him. And I was like, it's been, it feels like 5 years, but it's been like that long.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about the others in the band? Is his daughter's in the band? Is that right?
Yeah, his daughter's in the band.
Yeah.
So she's only been in the band since the last tour. We did like some theatre shows in Australia, New Zealand. And she's like a new addition. And so also Carlo, the saxophone player, who's from Melbourne, from Melbourne.
Yep.
He was also on the tour before this. But the bass player, Tony Buchan, Brett Adams on guitar, and Neil Anderson on keys, we've been doing gigs roughly, about 14, 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah, which is cool.
Because obviously being a Kiwi, I grew up on split ends and then also totally. around that sort of mid to late 80s when his solo career really kicked off.
Yeah.
You know, when he had There's a Fraction Too Much Friction and I Hope I Never
Made My Day.
Have you ever had to play Party Haka?
I've played it before.
Have you?
Yeah.
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 Because he did that with the Herbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've played it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to love that song. Yeah.
And that was a song we learned at school.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's like we're a multicultural school and it was just like a combination of the two.
Totally.
Two cultures.
Totally.
Know? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he's always represented. He's always, you know, like New Zealanders are like that. And the Finn Brothers, I guess, are like that, you know. They're just... Yeah, they embrace where they're from and they celebrate it, you know.
Mm.
And they're like royalty in New Zealand, man.
Yeah.
Like it's so, people just love them, you know. They really respect them and they're it's cool. It's been such a trip and an amazing experience playing with him and get to play with him and, going to New Zealand with him and stuff. It's been amazing.
Is there certain... because we've been here for a couple of hours now. We had dinner and stuff and had a chat and all that sort of stuff. And we were talking about the different regions and accents and stuff in New Zealand and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Have you noticed when you've toured with Tim if there's more support in different parts of New Zealand?
Nope.
Nah, not at all.
I not enough... To me, for notice, it just always felt supported.
Yeah.
It never not felt supported.
Yep.
There was always so much love in all the cities. I haven't done regional stuff with Tim.
Yep.
There, he usually just does, you know, the main sort of cities and stuff.
Yeah.
But in saying that, like I've always felt like there was just, always so much love and support for him, everywhere,
And so. What about here? So the concerts that you do?
Yeah, here as well. It's just I think it's
a big Kiwi crowd, or he's sort of
It's a good question. It's not. It's probably a bit of a mix. I think it's a bit of a mix.
Mm.
You know, it's a sort of I guess an older crowd. You know, because back when he was super popular, and but there's still I guess still always generations coming up and, you know, their parents playing their music to kids and stuff like that too. Mm. There's always that. But I felt like it's a mix.
Yeah, that's
but
cool.
There's a slight difference in the feeling in New Zealand. It's like a lot more... You can feel that he's really treasured there. You really feel that.
Yeah,
like... The importance of what he's done.
Yep.
You feel that there a lot more.
And he's still writing and recording music, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's always that fear of, not fear, maybe fear is not the right word, but of an artist becoming a legacy act.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like he's...
He doesn't like that.
That at all. No,
he's not.
And that's why, if you keep inventing yourself and
we have to
keep mixing the sets, and exactly. So he's very aware of it, right?
Well, that's why we're doing 3 days of rehearsal. It's not, we don't need to learn the songs.
Yep.
It's just like he just wants to do it differently.
Yeah, that's
you know
cool.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're just doing, we just got to figure out, we just jam a bit, and it's kind of really fun.
That's
and
cool.
We try to stumble, and, it's like we just got to be quick on our feet and just try to like come up with something hip as quickly as possible as a band. And we're so much better at now than, you know what I mean, when we first started 15, you know what I mean? But like, it's because we know each other, we know how each other plays and how we play together. So, yeah, and the musicians are so great. It doesn't matter what style, like we can play so many different styles, you know, that we can just throw in, just try different things. Like, we tried it. Like, we were working on Weather With You today, for example, and Tim was just like, he's literally said, I'm so bored of this. And he was like, so he doesn't want to do it like the regular way, you know what I mean? Even though there's something that he understands that, you know, the crowd, you know, like, he understands the audience's sort of thing, but also for himself, he's a creative, so he's like, he can't just let it just be what it is unless he's enjoying it, you know? So we're like totally like fucking with it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, yeah, we're totally just, we just, yeah, just, it's been really interesting. Just like the last sort of hour we just spent like trying to play it differently, and we're getting somewhere, you know, towards the end. So
that's cool.
Yeah, we might be, yeah, people might be in for a treat, you know, if they see the Blues Fest gig. That'll be just a slightly different thing, you know. And it might not work, it might work, might not work, but so I don't think he cares. I think it's more the fact that it's different, it's more exciting for him, keep to doing it, because just wants to be turned on, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, yeah.
And I love that, because as a musician, as someone that like gets bored easily too, it's like, I get it, you know.
Yep.
I respect that, and it's like, oh yeah, I want to help, you know.
Yep.
Yeah,
so he definitely won't go down as a legacy act, so that's good.
Yeah. He just wants to do the, you know, he knows he does the same songs and stuff, and you know, but he's happy to. I've played so many different, like Fraction, Too Much Friction's one, like we're playing it more like the record now, but when, you know, 15 years ago we were playing it so different. We're playing it almost like a swampy sort of New Orleans swampy thing.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's always different. You don't know what to expect.
I think because, you know, knowing, you know, around this time I was, you know, I was playing drums when that song first came out. And I remember hearing that on the radio.
Yeah.
It was like, I haven't heard anything like that from a New Zealand pop song.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that kind of got ingrained to me with that song. So if I, you know, personally, if I'd gone and seen you guys playing that swampy version of that song, I probably would have gone, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But it worked. I remember worked.
Yeah.
But now, like, Tim has worked over the years a lot with a drummer called Ricky Fattah.
Yep. Yeah. No,
okay. So, yeah. So, and he's one of those, I don't know how. For me, it seems like he's like an underrated, not underrated, but he goes under the radar a bit.
More under the radar, not underrated.
Underrated.
Rated. Yeah, yeah. Under the radar, yeah.
He's highly rated
for me,
under the radar.
Gotcha,
sorry,
gotcha,
I meant.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, but he's come up with, he's like got an incredible feel. It's unbelievable. And also the part he came up with, that part, like it's like a half, it's almost reggae but not, and it's like, yeah, he's always coming up with like interesting parts, like it's like a basic beat but it somehow flips it in a weird way that makes it like different. And he's it's been a joy actually learning, because he played a lot of stuff. He still works with Tim. So, yeah, they're always kind of just doing stuff. He's, you know, I think they're friends, you know.
Yeah.
And, but, yeah, so that's, yeah, it's been really fun learning, you know, his parts and stuff like that. And, you know, I didn't really know much about him until I started working with Tim.
Right.
So that's been, a real treat to, you know, check Ricky Fattar out. But yeah, if you haven't heard of him, check Ricky Fattar out.
Because, do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Yeah. So, okay, so you've got the the rehearsals, then you've got the Factory Theatre gig, and then you've got Blues Fest. So what happens after that? Is there any more stuff with Tim, or you move on to something else?
Nothing nothing like in the books. And you know, Tim's, I think he's kind of retired, like not retired, he's like semi-retired now. Like after the last run, he was like, he got that bug again. He just gets that bug. It's so amazing to see. But he's like, he was kind of bumming, you know, that like it was six, we only did six shows, and it just felt like it was like we were just getting started, you know, like by the fourth, fifth, sixth show, like then we're starting the band was like really starting to cook, you know.
I watched a video today on YouTube of the Sydney gig in September last year. And it's like a 28-minute video, so watching the arrangement of the songs, and looked like you're into it.
Yeah, we were into
it. He was getting right into it.
Yeah. And he's totally, he's just going for it, man. He just, you know, he's people don't know, but he's, if you don't know much about Tim, he's naturally like theatrical. The split ends were
That's
so theatrical.
That's a split ends thing, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, so. And he's the way his sort of mind works or something is like real theatric. He loves theatre. The theatrics of performance is really important to him.
Mm.
It's really interesting. Like, you know, look at all the old split and videos and stuff and the suits. And it wasn't because they were trying to sell records. They were like, that was the concept, was because they like, that's what they wanted to do, you know, which is pretty, it's pretty interesting. Like, I don't think that way. I've never, you know, sort of thought that way, you know.
So does he expect...
I find that fascinating.
Does he expect the theatrical side of things from the band?
No, not at all.
Not asked of?
No, it's more, he loves us just to sound, like, musically good.
Yeah.
And interesting, and sort of, he just wants it to feel good, and make, if it makes him feel good, then it's right, you know. So we're just, he's like a, it's a funny thing, but we're naturally, the whole band is there to give, and you know, to bring his songs to life or something, and you know, in whatever way we come up with, you know. And it's like, yeah, so there's a lot of room for creativity. So it's more about, it's less about how you play it, like the style of, you know, and more about, learning. Like we've been together a long time, so we have a thing, you know, that when you, it takes a while for a band or a certain group of players to develop a band feeling, you know. And so we have a unique feeling in the band for whatever reason, you know. So it's really fun that way, and kind of exciting, you know. When it kicks in and it's like, when it's really happening, it feels great, you know.
That's cool.
It's cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
That's cool.
And he turns on, you watch today, like we're just, for whatever reason, like you don't know when the music's going to really hit, you know. It's like, even though you're rehearsing, but... today we're playing It's Only Natural, and everyone for whatever reason, the song just came to life, and we were just rocking like it was, like we were already playing Blues Fest, you know, and we're just rehearsing, but everyone's just gone for it like 100%, and it's really fulfilling inside.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, it's really, really, really fun.
That's great.
Mm.
And we were hoping to, I was hoping to get in there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they closed it before I got there.
Yeah, because, that's why we did it here, because I was like, I was trying to get Stevie to so I can do the, you know, show him the kit rundown and stuff, and but they're super strict with their time. So basically, we're here from because it's a venue, and it's like there's this literally a person just coming in, opening the doors, and then like
yeah, clocking
us out.
They're on a shift. Yep.
Exactly. So it's a shame. Like other times, I think every other time, any other rehearsal place, we could have just, you know, done it there. But the person's like, I really want to go home. Like,
yeah, fair enough.
And I was like, okay, yeah, fair enough.
I did see the photos you post. I did see the photos okay, cool. you post on your yep. Instagram today. So
yeah.
So explain the flying Tom. Looks like there's a flying Tom.
Yeah.
Virgil Donati style.
Yeah. So, yeah, because I'm left-handed, I play the whole kit sort of in a mirror image. But basically, where my auxiliary snare is, to my right, I have a 13-inch rack Tom there. And I just sort of got it tuned down almost, so it's almost dead.
Mm.
And it's more like for certain songs... it's just to beef up the snare. It's almost like an accent thing. Like
okay.
for example, like songs like "Dirty Creature," you know, digga 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 dum dum boom digga digga digga.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Boom, like just to have that. So I hit sort of, and I just felt like it felt more natural to have it there. So my hands were open, and I just thought, because I can, you know.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not like It's, you know, normally, if you're doing a gig, it depends on where you're gigging, you know, but it's like, yeah, I'll play all sorts of different, you know, sizes of kits, you know, depending on what you got to do. But that's basically why I have it there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it just felt natural and just to have those, that hand open. So I hate the floor tom and that together, you know. Things like that.
That's great. Cool. All right, let's roll it back. Let's go all the way back to the beginning, how it all started for you as a musician, drummer. And
oh, okay, yeah.
So
I came out of my mum's vagina when I was...
I heard
13th
that.
Of December.
I heard
in
that.
In 19...
you know how we're talking about, do you cut things?
The what?
You know how we were talking about...
Oh, yeah,
about,
that's going to be cut now.
No,
yeah?
Not at all.
Oh, right, okay, cool.
No.
I've got photos of me literally playing a drum when I was 10 months old.
Mate, I have that photo.
You have it?
I have it, yeah.
Yeah.
See, audio? It's audio. Look, what? People.
Oh, right.
No, I'm
confused.
I do. I'm tricking everyone. So, well, they can't see it, obviously, because...
Yeah.
That's it there, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And... So apparently, when I was 10 months, like if I was being a little shit or if I was like, you know, crying and stuff, I would, they would give me that drum. My parents would put me in the cot and put that drum and I would literally play it for 2 or 3 hours without stopping.
Right.
So I was like, yeah. So it's, I don't know if that had anything to do with anything, but it's like, apparently that would silence me and I would just
do that.
Yeah. So I found that interesting. But I didn't really start playing drums until I was 13. I started it when I was 13. A friend of mine had an electronic kit. His name was Robert. I forget his last name now, but he was getting lessons and he had like an electronic drum kit and he was like he had like good technique and he just had a drum teacher I remember he had for his age, you know, he was, yeah. And I don't know, I was like, I just started playing it and sort of just found it interesting. And then I started working, the very next year, I sort of started working, like packing shelves and stuff at Mobile. Then I worked at Pizza Hut and I saved up some money and bought myself a small kit. And yeah, it was like $400 or something.
Mm.
And I used to play it, like, I set it up right-handed because, you know, I just got like a beginner's drum book.
Yeah, and it's all right-handed, right?
Yeah, and I didn't know how to set it up, so I looked at the catalogues and they were right-handed.
Mm.
And so I found it extremely difficult. And then one day I was like, you know, maybe a couple months in, I was like, wait, what if I swapped it over? Because I was goofy-footed, so it's my foot is the problem.
Your foot's the problem, yeah.
Yeah, so I swapped the whole kit over, and then I immediately could play everything I could right-handed.
Yep.
And it felt natural.
Yep.
It just felt, oh, yeah, okay, this makes sense now. Where the right-handed sort of felt a bit awkward. I didn't know why, you know. But, like, this basic foot-wise, you know, this is very basic beat still and stuff like that. Mm. So, and then I just got really into it. Like, and I would practice, like, 4 to 6 hours after school every day, sometimes 10 to 12 hours on the weekends.
Yep.
When, like, I was really heavily into it. I started getting lessons with Milan Troja in at Billy Hyde's, like a lot of Sydney drummers did. And then I, you know, I guess throughout my life my discipline has varied, but, like, you know, I was relatively disciplined back in high school, and then I went to AIM, the Australian Institute of Music, after I finished high school.
Yep.
And I studied with Dave Plenty there, and I was there for, like, sort of 4.5 years. Like, I flunked one of the I think, like, history or some silly subject that I had to do, like you know, so I had to do, like, a half extra half year. But I had, like, thankfully I had, like, a little sort of a half scholarship for that. Mm. So that helped a lot, sort of financially and stuff. What else? Yeah, it's been a while. But that's what I remember anyway.
Yeah. Like, so, from so musical when family, I started. Musical family?
No, not at all.
Not at all. Nowhere.
Not at all. No. My grandma on my mum's side played piano.
Okay.
She loved a bit of piano. She played a bit. But she never she never got lessons. She wasn't, like, I think they were too poor to get lessons, or she was never encouraged, but she loved piano. So she probably had it. But, yeah, I you know, very supportive family, but never, not really musically inclined at all. Like, they loved music, obviously, like, so we had great records and stuff growing up, but they didn't play any musical instruments at all.
Yeah, gotcha. Who were some of the earlier drummers that were influencing you?
Okay, all right, really early on, for reals, it was, like, I remember Ben Gillies from Silverchair.
Wow, really?
Yeah, when I was 13, 14, I was like...
Right.
Because he was this kid, you know, he's probably, like, my age, similar age.
Yep.
I was like, you know, and he's just like, to me, I was like, wow, that's, you know, that's a real, yeah. And then, you know, I guess once I started getting lessons, then I got turned on to, like, real drummers, you know, like, at Billy Hyde's, which was such a, at the time, was such an amazing sort of...
Yep. Was it an
institution? Communal
institution,
yeah. Right?
Yep.
So you could go in and you'd watch all the DCI videos,
yeah.
Like Dennis Chambers, yep. Like, I guess all the usual suspects, like, you know, Dave Weckl was always, like, a really... I just couldn't believe that you could sound like that on the drums, like, and especially I was just like, I'd hear my drums and they wouldn't sound like that at all. Like, I think a lot of us went through that, like,
yeah,
how do you get your drums to sound like that kind
well,
of
we
thing,
didn't have,
you
know? Yamaha recorded customs either, but
exactly.
That's another thing.
And they yeah, so, like, but Steve Gadd was a real big influence on me sort of later, like, once I started really, whatever clicked when I started appreciating the art of the drumming, I suppose, and I really, really, you know, fell in love with Steve Gadd. Who else? Jimmy Chamberlain from Smashing Pumpkins. This was, like, in high school. Dave Grohl from Nirvana. Like, I was Matt Cameron from Soundgarden. It's like I was kind of, like, in high school into sort of grunge and that sort of thing, and John Stanier from Helmet, I was really into him. This is and then yeah, later on I guess I also got into the jazz drummers too, so Art Blakey, Tony Williams. So it was way beyond, like, my level of comprehension at the time, but I didn't know why I loved them. I just you know, I was like just amazed. And Max Roach as well. So Art Blakey, Tony, Max Roach with what's the name, trumpet player,
Miles?
No. Max Roach used to play. Oh my god, I'm so bad with names. Clifford Brown.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was really into that stuff. Some live albums that I used to have on cassette. I used to like. I was like, yeah. So I had a kind of varied sort of stylistically, I suppose. Like it was like I had the rock and jazz. Then I got into the James Brown guys.
Yep.
I really got into those guys, like especially the live albums and stuff. I was like, just the arrangements and how tight the band was. I gravitated towards the groovy feeling always. Since for me, the feeling of the groove was something I was like a mystery and a fascination for me. Mm-hmm. It's like I've been less about, trying to play as fast as I can, but I was more like in the nuance of a hi-hat or something. I was more into the nuances of, like, for whatever reason, you know, for better or for worse, I was into like the subtle, you know.
Mm.
I'd play a hi-hat sometimes for like hours just like trying to figure out like, yeah, just the space between the notes, stuff like that, like in feeling and, how tightly I had my foot and how lightly, like, I don't know why, just being weird, you know.
It's not weird, that's cool.
Yeah, but it's like, it was, yeah, I just, my mind was into, was like fascinated with the subtleties of, like, you know, of sound or for whatever reason. So it's because this, I don't know, it's still a mystery to me, you know. It doesn't end. The discovery and the mystery for me is like endless. But I think I was influenced by just, you know, the usual suspects. There's so many great drummers, man, and so many, you know, inspiration was never far away.
Yep.
You know, it's like, yeah, you know, there's so many, for whatever reason, you know, there's so many different ways of playing the drums. There's so many different ways of playing the drums.
Mm.
That's amazing.
It's great,
you know?
About drums, eh?
Yeah. And only drummers really really know that, like, if they're like, yeah, drummers, you know, they really know that. But yeah, I don't know what it's like for other, you know, instruments, but I know we all share that as drummers, you know, so that's pretty cool.
When you came out of AIM, while you were at AIM, were you sort of playing with ensembles or and going out and playing gigs, forming bands and going out and playing clubs and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so I was already, I was already playing in, like, cover bands. So I was just playing in, like, top 40 type cover bands, like, you know, like those real working type things. But I was happy that I was doing it, because I was working, I was earning money at like 19, and, you know, and like getting to play venues and, you know, like, you know, like, and then like women at gigs and stuff like that. You know, so yeah, that was a lot of fun, you know. So on the weekends, I would, I'd be doing like sort of cover gigs and originals. I've always done, you know, and rehearse and during the week with my original bands and stuff like that. And I just played with as many people as I could, different styles, you know. I love playing with people. I still do. Like, for me, it was, after a while, it became a chore to practice and stuff like that by myself. And so I just started playing a lot with other people, and I was more about the unique energy that happens when you play with different people and stuff like that, and trying to create something, you know, trying to discover the best way to play and, you know, and to be with the people that you're playing with and adjusting and, like, you know, just to find the highest possible feeling that you get. I aim for that each time, you know, when I play. But I find that gets me off, that turns me on, you know, is like that yeah, that thing. I haven't practiced properly for so long,
yeah.
Which is bad. You can really hear it now. It's like, especially on social media, all these kids just playing the shit out of the drums. I feel like, just saying, it's like, I admire, like, you know, it's like, the truth is the truth. You can't, do you know what I mean? It's like, you can't, it's like, you're not going to get away from it. This is, I don't shy away from the, you know, the truth.
Yep.
I do know what I enjoy, and I'm way more aware than ever of my strengths and weaknesses and stuff, but the art never goes away, you know what I mean? So what you don't use, you lose. And so, thankfully, I've been wanting to practice again, you know, which, yeah, instead of just playing, because I used to just play, and that would be enough to maintain my, you know, I had basically all I needed in terms of facility to express what I wanted to express and to play with the people that I wanted to play with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the practice thing, when we were texting, setting this up today, you said to me last night that, we'll be finished about 6 o'clock. And I said, yeah, I'll get in there between 6 or 6:30. And you said, you specifically said, that's all right, I'll just hang around and practice.
Yeah.
So straight away I thought, practice.
Yeah.
I reckon wonder what he's practicing. That's what I was thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I would have, when I practice, I just work on the fundamentals, like on the basic, you know, movements of my limbs, my legs and my hands, and try to get them even,
More of a maintenance thing, or?
Yeah, okay. Especially with, and Tim, because I just felt rusty, like yesterday, I don't know if it was just, it always feels like it's just you, but yesterday, on the first day of rehearsal, I just felt a bit rusty, and I was just like, I'm very hard on myself. I've always been extremely unforgiving when it comes to, for whatever reason, you know. So I just felt like, you know, I just have to just, you know, and it doesn't take long. It's just something to loosen up my body. And I usually try to live my whole life with my body as loose. And that's like, I do that deliberately.
Yep.
Because I know if I start my physically tensing up, I can't play drums.
Gotcha.
So it's like, I just, you know, it might look like, yeah, I just try to stay really aware of whatever stresses and, you know, things. I try to keep my body very relaxed so I can be limber and sort of play, you know, fluid and sort of relaxed, I guess. And that seems to work for me. I don't know. Yeah. So I just practice very fundamental things like keeping the bass drum and the hands locked in together, you know, not trying to play fast, just trying to get the spaces in between the notes feeling. Yeah, get him in that flow state, I guess, where the, you know, just, yeah, and it just feels natural, like natural. Yep. So getting back to, it's almost like you're always getting back to a natural state, which is a higher state or something. So, yeah, physically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so that's cool. That's all it is, yeah. It's
and
nothing.
How did you feel today?
Much better. Today was much better.
Yep.
Yeah, the whole band and we were starting a, some songs especially really sounded really
good. Yeah, oh, no, you said that about how, you know, some of the songs sort of took off.
I'm really critical, yeah.
Yep.
But so it's like, yeah, it was, there was a couple of songs that sounded legit for real.
Cool.
So, and yeah, we still got a day tomorrow. We're going to run the set. And yeah, the band is just, you know, every time we play, they're just, yeah, they're really super professional and they're so giving. They're just giving people. So I think that's really important as a musician. Like my favorite musicians are very giving. It's not about them. It's just like the fact that they have the ability to give, because that takes a long time to even develop that skill, you know, but, yeah. So yeah, it's very selfless, and it's like you, yeah, it takes, you know, any good musician will know that's when you start really feeling the vibes, you know. And Tim was happy, man. He's like, he's dancing around, and like, and that's a good feeling when your boss is like,
yeah, at rehearsal,
you know, at rehearsal, yeah. You know, it's like it's feeling good. So
yeah,
and yeah, it's weird that like that's for me. It's like you don't know when the music's going to hit you. Doesn't mean just because you're playing music doesn't mean that you're in the music all the time. Okay, so it's like, you know, it's so you can be at a rehearsal and then if it hits you, I just can't help myself, and it, I just, you know, it come, you know, the my expression from my being comes out, and that's for me is what will always keep me going.
Yeah.
I don't know when I'm going to have a good gig or when I'm going to, you know, when the music's going to come, you know, to me. You know, because it's not, yeah, I feel like I'm so, I can just do as much as I can, you know, for it to come through. But, yeah, it's something, you know, spiritual for me.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. So, The Strides.
Yep.
It's reggae.
Family band.
Family band, yeah. Reggae band.
Yeah.
Good time band.
Yeah.
Just a party every time. Right?
Yeah.
So how long have you been in that setup?
So... I don't know how long The Strides have been going for, like, since the beginning, because I wasn't the original drummer.
Yep.
Alan Hicks was the original drummer, and he's gone now to start making documentaries and stuff with Quincy Jones. He did the one, Quincy Jones one,
oh,
on, yeah,
oh,
on,
that's
on Netflix, and he did the Clark Terry one. Uh-huh. If you ever check out Clark Terry,
right,
it's called Keep On Keeping On. It's an amazing doco. You'll just a tearjerker. It's like, it'll fill your heart up. And it's a beautiful story of a, you know, of a incredible musician and person and human being who was Al's mentor. So I recommend, highly recommend anyone listening to this as well, check out Keep On Keeping On by Al Hicks.
Is that on
Clark Terry, who was a trumpet, jazz trumpet player, yep, who was Miles' favorite trumpet player, basically. Okay. And Quincy's hero as well.
Right.
You know, they're like, Quincy and him are like brothers, and that's how he got the Quincy gig, is because, you know, he was involved with Clark Terry, and Quincy was impressed that he was working on that and stuff. So Al started that with Nick Garbett, who's on trumpet, and Rory Brown, who's on bass, who still plays with us every now and then to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And it started as an instrumental, and then they did an album, and then I joined on percussion, or like auxiliary percussion, basically. So Al would play drums, and I had like shakers and tambourines and sort of bells and whistles and sort of, you know, like a timbali, things like that, you know, just... and I did that for a few years. And then Al, when he moved to the States, is when I jumped on drums. So it's probably about 10, 12 years. I don't know how long it's been.
Yep.
Yeah, I lose count. Maybe 10 or 12 years or something that I've been playing drums with The Strides. We've just grown together, and we've had we've been through so much bullshit and so much, you know, it hasn't been an easy road for us at all, but we've
so much bullshit, like as a band, like a no, internal or from external,
yeah, both, okay. But yep. Like mainly, yeah, not so much, you know, like it never felt like it was gonna... I've been in bands where it's like it was really
toxic.
Yeah. And it was never felt toxic with the band.
Okay.
We're probably, you know, although maybe when we were younger, we were probably all toxic, you know, when we were like in our 20s, just like, you know, just being wild or whatever, you know. But now, as I think, because we've gone through all that, and we matured, like, it's, to me right now, it's like at a really special place. We got Ronnie, who's like the, you know, he's like, he's getting on, you know, but he's still out there just giving it his all, you know. So that's inspiring to me. And, you know, it's, if it's not a band that, like, I don't know, it's not very, yeah, it's, we're very extremely true to ourselves, and we're very respectful of each other's expressions in the band and personalities. So it's like, It's like nine really strong personalities that come from all different parts of the world and different cultures, and just somehow get together and play. And we've been so fortunate to have, because a lot of us, we're all working musicians, right? So a lot of us can't do some of the gigs sometimes. And we've been so fortunate to have amazing, almost like sub players to come in. And so a lot of people have come through the band and still play in the band, like Lisa Pomoda. She like fills in for me. Declan Kelly on drums, he fills in for me. We're blessed, and we got like, Danny Pliner is normally the guy, but Shannon Stitt, he's amazing keyboard player, fills in. We've had all these different great bass players and guitarists. Matty Smith used to be in the band, now Jake McDougall's on guitar. Horns, like the best horn players.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to enjoy it. And like they work, they'll just, slum it with us, and we're with they'll sleep in shitty motels for it, just to have fun on the gig, which is like, for me, is such a joy to have such quality players come and just want to play and just blow and just have fun. And you take the music seriously because you just love it, but it's like, but that's it, you don't take yourself seriously, and you just sort of you try to get the party started, and we just try to, the concept's very simple. We play very simply, and we especially me, I just keep it's like almost like a reggae feel right or something, that kind of thing. Yeah. I just almost like dumbed down, and it's just the funnest thing. It's something happens, and once we're locked in, it just feels so good, and people dance, and it's like fun, Yeah.
You just mentioned Phil Rudd there. It was yesterday I was watching the Back of Black video.
Awesome. Yeah.
Have you studied Phil Rudd when he...
Yeah. I love Phil Rudd.
Like,
I love Phil Rudd, man. I really studied. Yeah. I checked him out. Yeah.
So I don't think people realise how hard it is to play Back of Black.
Yeah.
It just sounds like a...
Without sounding naff.
Yeah.
It's easy to sound naff on
it's
all those
songs.
It's just
where he puts that snare drum, right?
Yeah. You're
talking about note spacings and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but like I listen to, to Angus and Malcolm playing guitar, and it's almost like when they're playing their riff, they push it a little bit, but then they know that Phil's pulling the snare back a little bit, and it never sounds like it's dragging, but if you were to put a metronome to it or clap your hand to it,
it feels amazing.
You'll struggle.
There's a mystery to it still. It's a mystique
and
a mystery.
Is he slowing down? He's not slowing down.
No.
It's just where he's putting.
Yeah.
And then you watch the video and how he's moving his body, right?
Yeah.
Just the way his whole body sort of moves, like the motion, and you can see where he gets it from.
Yeah.
I probably sound a bit weird talking like this.
No, not at all. To me, it makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like those live gigs where he's on, especially even the later ones, because it's like that when they're playing those massive stadiums, and like, do you know what I mean? Like that whole fucking place is fucking
moving,
man. It's like you can't. You could literally. It's the first beats that you teach any kid.
Yeah.
That's what's amazing about it too, right? So it's like I would teach, you know what I mean? When any teacher, I would like, it's a great sort of learning tool, for basicness or simplicity, right? Mm. But when you start, start like wising up to stuff, you realize there's something else going on there. And it's not a fluke.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the real deal. The feeling. And, like, Malcolm as well was such an amazing rhythm guitarist. Like, you could tell they worked on, the feeling. It's like once you're in a groove, you really know. Something happens.
Yep.
Like, and it's not something that an individual, for me personally, you can do it. You can get into a groove by yourself, obviously. But when you do it with a bunch of people, it's like amazing feeling that you don't want to end.
Yep.
So it sort of bypasses some. It'd be interesting to know what happens in the brain, because it bypasses something, and something transcends, right? And so, and the movement, like you said, there's something that it viscerally happens in the human body where you want to move. You know, you dance, like, and you don't have to learn how to dance, but you'll just naturally want to move. You know? And that's, to me, is like. It's that's the part of me, I guess, the where this felt like, okay, my job, I can see this as a role I can play as a job in terms of like a service, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like, oh yeah, you're actually giving something, you know, to people, like, you know, when you tap into that, knowing that you can actually make someone dance, that's kind of like pretty special. So, and it's, don't get me wrong, it's not, you know, we all have our days, but it's like when you do, you know, you do tap into that, because it's something you tap into. It's not, it's not unowned to me. It's not just something that is, it's in, it's rhythm. Rhythm's like a universal thing. I know that it's like a, it's in the almost the structure of how the universe is built, you know? And so, you know, and when we're the lucky people that are, we're the people that are lucky enough to tap into that, like, it doesn't matter what instrument you play either. Mm. It's like that feeling is like really special. That's why you can play the simplest beat and be the happiest man. You could play it forever.
You know what? It doesn't even have to be an instrument. Like,
That's right.
I can get that feeling from walking or running.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah, yep. It's not about even playing the instrument. Yep. That's right. It's like it's inbuilt in working. You can work even if you're working. You can get into a rhythm, into a groove when you're working.
Yep.
You can get into a groove like so many people that are like cooking, like what about all the people like the street food vendors everywhere, all over the world?
Yeah.
It's rhythm. It's like that to me is rhythm. That's the rhythm I'm talking about. It's like that thing that it's beyond instrument. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You get into a groove, and that's something that the move. It creates movement on. It creates life. It's life, you know. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah,
it is.
And that's the thing that will always keep me coming back. Yep. It's not the drums that keep coming out. I get sick of every, you know. And sometimes I don't want to hear drums. You know, like I don't want to hear. You know, sometimes they can be, drums can be sometimes the most unmusical instrument in the world, you know. So, but ironically, when you can make music on the drums, it's really special, you know. And you don't know when that's going to happen. that's to me that the rhythm of life is really, I really like find that fascinating on the human beings in all aspects, like you said, not just not just playing music, but like how humans cook and work and like find, you know, like whatever trade they're doing or whatever, you know, how they find, you know,
movement. It's how you swing a hammer to knock a nail in, you know. Exactly. there's a rhythm and a movement to that.
Exactly.
That if you tense it up, and if it's not in the groove or the rhythm,
what happens?
You fucking bang your finger or you bend the nail, right? Yeah. Simple as that.
It's like it teaches you. It's like, okay, so the creative life wants you to let go, and wants you to dance. It's a dance. You know what I mean? It's like the joy. Yeah, that connection is where the joy is for me.
It's special. Man,
it really is. It's the only thing that, you know, through all the struggles you go through as being a musician and stuff or whatever, or even just life in general, that's the thing that sort of, there's like there's a base thing there, you know, that can keep you going, and, you know, to the next day.
gotcha
I'm rambling on too much.
No, it's good.
Okay,
it's what we do here. Now, I want to talk about your mate, Nick Weaver.
Okay.
Now, Nick passed away last year.
A couple years ago.
About 2 years ago, sorry. and you guys ended up completing an album that was was being made at the time, right?
Yeah.
And I've been listening to the album for the last couple of days, and it's fucking awesome. It's fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Love it.
Yeah, that was really special. So, yeah, Nick was someone I met at AIM, and we just hit it off. He was a bass player and just a super talented guy and just the funniest guy. Like, anyone who knew Nick would tell you this guy is the... He was, like, you know, like a Dave Chappelle type level of humor. He was so funny, you know, and just... And not in a funny way, like... Never in a derogatory way, never like to put you down or anything like that. It was just he was a very thoughtful and, you know, sensitive guy. Like, so he was, but he was just so funny that, like, you would always, you would just, you couldn't, it wasn't like something that you would envy. It was something that you would just be felt included. He always made everyone feel included in the humor or something. It's hard for me to explain, to describe. But so we were really close. Like, you know, we were super close for years. And, you know, we played in a band called Deep Sea Arcade together. And, you know, people loved, for whatever reason, loved our, you know, the groove that me and Nick created together. And it was like, obviously I miss him, you know, every day. There's not a day that goes by I don't think about him or you know, and miss him. But, we played in a lot of different things together.
Mm.
Yeah. And basically, before he passed away, literally like hours before he actually passed away, Simon Ralph from the Tambourine Girls and also played in Deep Sea Arcade, he just got the passcode for his, what do you call it, for the iLock.
Yeah, thing. Right.
Yeah, and so he had all these, basically his album was like kind of 85 to 90% done.
Yep.
It just needed, like, Miles Thomas had played on three tracks.
Yep.
And... I don't know if you've interviewed Miles yet.
I haven't yet.
Okay, all right. So,
but I know who. I know.
Yeah, Miles. Yeah. And the rest, there was no drums. I don't think there was a sort of scratch drums. And so me and also Nick's dear friend Nick Meredith, who's also a drummer, we went in and did the drums for the rest of the track. We just sort of, you know, I don't know. That time was just a bit weird because we were just mourning and grieving and still, you know, we just chose the songs. We played Won't Give In together. That was really special. Played double drums on Won't Give In. And we got to... Yeah, anyway, we got to finish his record and stuff. We basically went and finished his record. And that was... Felt super special and I... Yeah... It's so good, you know, to have that and to hear his voice and, have that for me. And, it's hard for me to describe. It was such a tragic, sad thing that happened. He just, literally over 9 weeks, they found out he had cancer. And from the first time I sort of heard about it, it just happened so quickly, like, 9 weeks is not a long, you know what I mean? It's not an on time. And like, we had a dark sense of humor, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, but it was just, it was just shocking, you know? It was just so mind boggling.
Did you realize that at the time when he was sort of first diagnosed that it's not going to be long?
No. No way.
It's almost like
Nick was.
We're going to fix this.
Yeah, no, the way Nick was, is he was like, I was like, all right, we'll just have to go, okay, that's cool. Yeah, you got cancer.
Yeah, we'll just,
exactly. Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
And I don't know, maybe he knew, but who knows? He did know, you know what I mean? He was like, he wasn't, even to the week before, you know what I mean? Like,
no burden on anyone.
Exactly. And he fooled me because it was like I hadn't, for whatever reason, I was busy around that time, and I didn't see him. I didn't see him deteriorate, so the like physically. So from the time he got it to the time he passed away, his whole body had deteriorated so much.
Yeah,
and so it was. It was like I would speak to him on the phone all the time.
Yeah.
So and it was. It was like he would literally. We were talking about man. It's not. This isn't. He's gonna. It's like it'd be like you know flicking a mosquito off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. This is my mentality. He's gonna flick this like a mosquito off. That's how he talked as well.
Yep.
You know. And so I was really. Yeah, I was. It really hit me hard when it happened. Mm-hmm. You know. But yeah, it was, and all like. All of my friends listening to this and all the people that, know him and knew him and stuff, like, we all have the same... You all made everyone feel like you were his best friend. Everyone is... He was everyone's best friend. He was, like, a special, special dude. Like, there's only people like that, only you may be lucky to meet one or two people like that in your whole lifetime, I reckon. He was one of those guys, like... Super, yeah. And maybe those guys just, you know, seem to always be the ones that go first or something. Or I don't know. They don't, maybe that's just bullshit, but it feels that way sometimes.
Yeah, right.
Maybe that. Maybe just that feeling is relatable. If okay. It's, you know, it's like that perception is highly relatable, in my opinion. When you get, yeah, when someone like just, yeah, basically just vanishes from this plane of existence, you know.
Mm.
But, yeah, I still feeling, you know, I still feel him somehow. Like, yeah, you know, someone like that will always, yeah, have an impression, even probably before you, you know, even after you go, after you die here. So he was a super profound human being and friend in my life, yeah. So it was, it's been a, yeah, and for, you know, all of us, you know, for so many musicians and, yeah, just a, yeah, just a very lovable human being, you know, just, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's an honour. It's like I just cherish all the times more than ever than he was alive. Mm. I cherish it now way more.
Mm.
And also the connections that we had, he had with all the people, I really love those people now more than I ever, you know, probably did when he was like the people that he was connected to. I just, because I know that if you were connected to Nick, then that meant you had something too, or something like that. Like, you know, he only, yeah. So that's how I feel about Nick and you know, the people in Nick's life and stuff. Yeah,
that's cool, man.
Mm.
So go. I'll link the album, the Nick Weaver album. What's the name of the album actually? Oh, hang on, I've got it on my phone. So the album's called "Won't Let Go."
Okay,
by Nick Weaver, yeah. And I'll
So that's the title song. One of the songs is "Won't Let Go." That's the one that me and Nick Meredith played double drums on.
Okay,
yeah, well, and that was fun. I really enjoyed that. Yeah,
this.
Yeah. So we.
Are you on the left or the right?
Good question. I think I'm on the right. When we did the session, I was on the right side and Nick was on my left.
Okay.
I'm the guy doing the pop, 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 pop on the snare. Every now and then you hear,
a little. My favorite. It's the guitar that
yeah. He was so good with the guitar tones, man. He was so specific. He knew, like, he was just, man, it would have been hard in being in a band with him as a guitarist because he knew exactly.
What is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
See you. Anyway, go listen to it, people. Yeah. We're going to play it all here.
Yeah.
Skunk Hour. Now, you are the drummer in Skunk Hour now.
I am the new drummer, right. Officially new drummer for Skunk Hour.
Right, so yeah. How did that come about?
So, basically, 2 weeks out of this book tour that they had, everything was booked, they had, as far as I know, they just had a falling out with the drummer. Like, I think he was just, his heart wasn't in it anymore. And,
was the original drummer?
The original drummer. So that's the bass player's brother.
Okay.
So, Michael is his name. And I used to be a fan of Skunk Hour. So basically, I think Ayo called Declan Kelly and he was like, oh, Dec, can you do this tour, man? Like, we don't, you know, we've got this tour booked. And he's like, oh, I don't know if I can do it. But you should, you know, call Carlos. He might be able to do it. And I already knew Al Goodman, who plays keys in the band. And Al was like, Al was cool. And I'd already done some gigs with Aya as well, the singer, the front man, just doing like sort of cover stuff. Like, he had a band called The Elements where we'd do some cool covers, renditions of some covers that he wanted to do and stuff. We'd already sort of knew each other. And then basically, yeah, they just called me I think it was like less than 2 weeks before the tour and said, hey, can you do this tour? And I was available and, made myself available. Can't remember. Yeah. And then, then we just met at rehearsal and I met, Warwick, the guitarist, and Dean on bass. And we just clicked immediately, like, as people, just quirky dudes, like, you know, and just, you know, left the center or something.
That's cool.
And we just clicked as musically and as people from the first rehearsal. And then, yeah, we just had the best time on that first tour. And it's so good to play. I just love those songs that they, you know, and
good fun to play.
So fun to play.
You can lay it down. Man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not rocket science. It's like, but it's right up my thing. It's just like, I like to be that guy for whatever reason. Just, you're laying it down. I get in making it feel good. And playing with Dean, you know, Sutherland is great on bass. He's a great bass player, great feel, and he knows those songs. Those guys knows the song, you know. They got that muscle memory of 30 years of, you know. So they have, when you play with that, it's like, it's really, yeah, fun. So, yeah, we've been having a ball. Like, we're all, yeah, you know, it's been, I don't know, I think it'll be 2 years in September this year or something that we can play together. Mm. It doesn't feel like long. It's been like maybe a couple of years that we've been playing together. But that's been so much fun. Yeah. And people still come out and are like, yeah, like Skunk Hour fans are like, really love the band.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they like really, it's one of those bands where the people that get it, like they really get it and they really get behind it. And I love that. I love that playing to that type of fan, you know.
Yeah,
that type of audience.
Some plans for new music? I know there was one.
Yeah, we did that one song.
Oh, so you played on that?
Yeah. Okay. But it was like, it was funny because the way it turned out. When we did the session, we had a way different sort of sound that when we recorded that, and then in the mixing process, it completely changed.
That's what I was going to ask. Did you actually play it, or was it?
No,
was
I it, played it.
Yeah, so maybe it's got.
It's got a sample.
Sample over
it's
top.
Got a sample on the snare drum. and it's because we went for almost like a Faith No More-y type sort of sound. That's how we recorded it.
Right.
To me, that in my brain, that was what it reminded me of, like that type of sort of funk rock. I don't know, rock funk rock sort of thing.
Yep.
But then they wanted to, for whatever reason, creatively wanted to turn it into, a drier sort of sound, you know, less bombastic and sort of, you can't do that when you've recorded, like, it would have, we could have done the drum. So, yeah, it was, it was kind of one of those things that, yeah, sort of came together, like, differently. But live, though, it's still, it's such a fun, it's a fun song to play live.
Yeah.
And we do it more, a bit more bombastic live, you know. So we sort of play it live more like how we initially sort of came up with it. And, yeah, we just jam on those things, like a lot of the stuff we literally just jam in sound checks and stuff like that. Whenever we get together in rehearsals and sound check, we'll just start jamming and, you know, someone will record it and go, hey, why don't we just, you know, it happens really organically and happens really quickly. Mm. Like, Aya's really quick with vocals and melody ideas, and Warwick is, they're very unique type of players. So, like, they don't sound like any other sort of players. They sound like themselves. They're so sort of individualistic. I don't know, like, how to describe them. But they're that type of musician where they're very... Yeah, just very individual sounding, sort of, you know. Anyone that's like, heard them that would know what I mean.
They're like an Australian Jamiroquai.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Because those guys, the guitar player, the drummer, and Jamiroquai, I mean,
yeah,
been with that band forever.
Yeah.
And they just have
yeah,
their way of playing. And
yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And that's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly right. It's
yep,
one of those, they're like that, you know.
Yep.
Where me as a, like, I've had to, throughout my sort of musical or drumming life, it's like I've had to play so many different roles. I've been able to
adapt,
you know, adapt and yep, to play, you know, pretend I was like, you know, this, you know, like I wanted to sound like I, you know, any, you know, style I played, you know, I just, yeah, tried to sound, oh, nice little spider, yeah.
Oh, I hate spiders.
Do you? Yeah.
So that's a little huntsman.
Was it? Was,
yeah,
that
just a little one. Well, would be from this tree.
Yeah.
But I just see that guy as someone who's going to grow up to be a big huntsman. But
yeah, I love, I don't mind spiders at all.
That is huntsman, eh? Is it?
Oh. Could be. It doesn't.
Oh, yeah, he's too quick.
No, I think you're right. Yeah, I think it is a huntsman. Yeah, I think it's a baby huntsman.
The way he's walking. Stay away from my bag. Yeah. You're not coming home with me, mate.
Yeah. He's just chilling.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, man, they're the best ones to have around your house if you're not afraid of, you know, spiders.
I got bitten by one.
Yeah, they bite, but they're nothing.
No, it was nothing major. It was around Christmas time, and we think it came off the Christmas tree that we bought. This is a few years ago. But anyway, we're in bed, and I think I was reading, and then I stopped reading, and like my arm dropped down or something like that. But my wife was still reading. She had the nightlight, and she said she kind of turned a little bit, and she saw this fucking massive shadow of a spider, right? So then so she went to lean over.
Yeah.
And then at that point, the spider ran down the thing up my arm, and then as I woke up and I touched my arm,
it went bang, whacked me.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, but it was more of a fright, like, because it was on my bicep, right?
Yeah, so it was just like a little. Just went, what the hell?
It was
that?
Like a, it's like a flick if someone flicks you with their nail. It was like that. It was like fuck. So then my wife's on the Google. We didn't realize that that huntsman bit. So it's like we're Googling.
Yeah. Yeah, they do bite, but nothing happens. Yeah.
No, it was just it kind of swelled up a little bit, but yeah, man.
No, so. I don't mind huntsmen, but like there's the ones you got to look at, those white tips.
The white tails, we get a white few of them around our place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're sort of flesh.
They're flesh-eating things, yeah. My uncle in New Zealand got bitten by one when he was in bed one night.
Yeah.
And his whole face started swelling up and he lost some skin.
Man,
and,
poor guy. Yeah, man, Straya. Redbacks, funnel webs are—they're legit scary looking things.
Yeah,
man.
They are.
Funnel webs, man. If you ever seen one of those, they're aggressive too, man.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and we got snakes, man. They're brown snakes. I'm terrified of brown snakes. And red bellies and stuff, but not so much even red bellies because they're kind of
Timid.
They're kind of more timid.
Yeah,
they'll fuck you up if
they'll fuck you up, but they want to get away from you.
If you play,
yeah.
But browns are aggressive, man. They'll chase you.
Yeah, fuck that.
And they're fast.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, that took a bit of a turn, eh? That bloody spider. Yep.
Yeah.
Going. So you're talking about how you're, you know, you've adapt, you know, you feel like you have to adapt to everything. And I think what you're trying to get to is that you don't think you have a sound. Well, I mean, I disagree with that and I reckon a lot of your peers would disagree with that too, yeah, that right. It's unmistakably you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I never think that way. Mm. I've never, and I don't hear myself.
Yeah, but I don't think any musician really, like, well, unless yeah. they're kind of, they're, what's the word I'm looking for, pigeonholed into a particular sound, and they own that sound, and that is their sound.
No, I love that too. But I think there's certain players, there's definitely musicians that are like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But yep. I've never as a goal.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something that I'd work towards, I never had my own sound.
Yep, yep.
So I'm wondering if I do have a sound, is that just me? I try to be as authentic to myself and to everyone else as I can be. Like my own ego, it's not like I don't try to escape from my ego. I try to not be 100% ego, but I mean ego in the sense of personality, like
yep.
just whatever's naturally comes out for whatever reason,
yep.
you know, is like that's what I try to be. I feel like it's for some reason it's important to me or something.
Well, it's important to a lot of other people too, because right, they keep okay. booking you, man.
Right? Yeah. You know? But so maybe sonically, that then maybe that's probably where that comes from. But I don't hear it in me when I hear myself play. I don't hear that. All I hear is mistakes, and like you know, all I hear is like you know is just the you know.
Why didn't you ask the other guy?
Yeah. All I hear is like what's wrong with it. Basically, that's all I hear when I listen to myself play. You right. know? And, but when I'm, because, you know, drums, and especially when you're trying to do it as like, as a service, I suppose, like, yeah. I'm trying to be as open sonically, you know, so the snare drum, I'm not trying to be attached
yeah,
to a specific sound, snare drum sound or bass drum sound. Like, even though I have my preference, I might have a preference, I love I think a lot of drummers love open sounding drums, you know, so it's like, you know, but for me that's rarely ever works. Okay. When you start putting microphones in and you start relationship sonically, for me, in my opinion, it changes everything. Mm. So you're no longer just in relationship with your drums, because you are getting mic'd up and then you are playing with other instruments and your other, so I feel like you have to sonically adjust, and I'm more than happy to adjust the sound of the drums mm. to suit whatever's happening, not so much stylistically but more sonically with the band, like, you know, meld the bass drum or, you know, meshing with the bass player, the guitars. I find that important and more distracting. It's what seems to happen is I find it. If it's not right, it's more distracting in my mind or something. Mm. So, and I don't want to be distracted. So I want to get into the music, right? And it's stopping me from losing myself.
Yep.
So it's like those things. That's why those things seem to become important or something. It's like it's a thing that you want to get. So you can get out of your mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you're not in your mind anymore. And you can't... And once you don't... If you don't deal with those problems or those nuances, it seems like they're always going to be distracting and they'll frustrate you. They're extremely frustrating to me.
So how often are you on a gig? I suppose, that would probably happen more often if it was just a fill-in type gig. You haven't got time to sort of think about and analyse the sound. Like, for example, you're here for 3 days in rehearsal, and, you know, so you've got those 3 days to sort that shit out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Before
yeah.
you go to Factory Theatre and to Blues Fest, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I've played with him for a long time, so that took a long time. It never ends. It just gets... I don't think it ever ends.
It just gets a little bit easier, I suppose, yeah.
It gets easier, but it's...
just tweaking
it. Yeah, but... I just think you just get more specific.
Yeah, okay.
You just, the more you do the same gig or the more you play the same song over and over and over again, for me, and I think for a lot of people, your mind seems to just get more specific to the point where you can't even, you know, it's like a never-ending, you know, it's like putting a microscope on something and then, you know, that little bacteria that's in there's probably got a microscope on something else because it just keeps going. And and if you zoom out, the same thing, the universe, it's like we're probably bacteria to the rest of the planets and, you know, like in the galaxies. And it's just like, it's a never-ending sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I used to hate that. Obviously, it was so frustrating because the frustration is real.
Yeah.
You know, we all, as musicians, it's like the frustration's real. So, but, and also like live. So you might be in a small room playing small rooms, but then all of a sudden when you start playing bigger venues, you know, like what you, a cymbal that used to hate or sound awful, you know, like in a small room, suddenly makes sense.
Yeah,
in a bigger venue, because it's like, oh, like, and the cymbals that you love, they just sound horrible in a big, you know. So it's one of those. The drums are like that, you know. And thankfully, I mean, we live in a time where you've got every sort of choice available, you know, any sound you can imagine, pretty much as like it's out there if you want it, if you really want it.
That's
you can get it. So, yeah, I just try to, I just try to be appropriate for the stylistically. And if there's anything that sonically that does sound like me, it's just coming because I'm expressing my soul or my heart, and you know, I'm putting my heart into it, I guess. And it's as simple as that. It's nothing else. There's no trickery, and for a lot of musicians, you know, like I love, I think it's, it's my side of that giving feeling, I guess, you know.
So with going back to the frustration, I'm just curious as to, you know, do you get on gigs where that frustration just never allows you the space to get into the music
to express? Oh, absolutely,
right.
Oh,
and
yeah.
How often do you reckon?
Oh man, it still happens, you know, and I don't know why it happens, and it could be so many things can throw you off. The sound of the room can be horrible, and no matter what you do, the drums just sound horrible, and it's like you have to do a job, so you got to play them, but in my mind or inside I'm dying because it sounds so bad to me or whatever. Like I just want to stop playing. I don't want to touch them,
and you can't,
it feels like a sin.
You can't brush it off.
Yeah, you can't brush it off.
Yeah, well,
It's like, and you know, and you could have set up that morning in a studio with the same drum sound, and they would have sounded amazing. So it's like, I don't know. I think there's so many factors. There's some things with experience. Thankfully, with experience, you start picking up on, you know, things like, so you start like, you know, learning how to adapt to certain rooms. So you look around, you go, okay, this is full of glass, or this is brick walls or square, you know what I mean? High ceilings. Like I noticed what I like, you know, I adjust a little bit the playing, my playing to the room. I tried to, I don't know. It's like big rooms are different. Big rooms, you're at the mercy of,
the sound guy.
Yeah, and like some of those big rooms, the bounces of the reverbs, and it's just going to sound horrible. They weren't built for, you know, PAs. They were built for, you know, acoustic. A lot of theaters like built to project acoustically. So once you put PAs in, like, they're always going to be a nuisance, you know. We live in this day and age where if you really wanted to, you could treat, you know, people, you know, spending millions of dollars treating rooms, like the Sydney Opera House, they're treating, you know, they treated that, you know, it sounds so much better than it used to. No day goes without me being frustrated, but then also, you know, the plus side of that is when you know, it, yeah, I think it's just life, you know. I just accept it now that I'm older. Accept the frustration 100%. I just take it all in. It's my responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's like, just like, yeah, it's like, I just take it as a, almost like a responsibility that I have to, yeah. And right. It's for no one else. It's just for me.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So talking of, you know, rooms, big rooms, you, Skunk Hour, right? The thing that came to mind there was you had a gig at Selena's, right?
Yep.
And I, because I, that was, that, was it before Christmas or something? And that's when we started messaging.
Okay, saying, yep. Yeah, I think it
would have been last year or whatever it was.
Yeah, I think it was in November or something, yeah.
Yeah, and I asked you how the gig went and you said it went good. But I went to see the Herbs actually play at Selena's.
Who?
The Herbs.
Oh, the Herbs. Oh, cool, yeah,
years,
yeah, yeah.
Years and years ago. There was Herbs and, oh, I can't remember who else played. But at Selena's, if you're a punter, you've got the couple of, like, you've got the big part of the room, but then there's like a mezzanine floor, and then if you stand under that floor, underneath the mezzanine floor, have you ever been in there?
Yeah, I have. I've seen.
That is the worst sounding. Yes, fuck.
That we Selena's,
had to. I mean, because we love the Herbs, right?
But did you go upstairs?
Didn't get up. We couldn't get up there.
Oh man,
so it would have sounded great.
It
and if we if we'd got ahead in front of the mezzanine, it would have sounded great.
Yeah,
but we were
room,
just stuck
that
in
room.
That room
sounds different everywhere you stand.
Yeah, right.
But. Man, but it is a classic venue.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
was like such a legendary venue. I saw a Perfect Circle there.
Wow, did you?
Yeah, that was amazing.
With Josh Fries?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah.
You know, he's touring again with
Perfect Circle. Yeah, with the Perfect Circle. I saw
that. Did you see
that?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I saw that. Yeah, follow me on Instagram.
Gonna, yeah. So he's going to do the tour and then he's just...
and like now he's playing with the Foo Fighters. It's
That's
like
crazy.
Yeah, he's just...
Oh, I love that guy, man. I've
unbelievable,
been
man.
A big fan of his for years and years.
Me too.
Yep.
Me too, man. He can do it all.
Oh, he's great.
And there's nothing he can't do.
And he's funny as fuck.
He's so funny. Oh, man. Yeah. He's like a... inspiration to so many people.
Yep.
Yeah, so many drummers. Mm. He's definitely... And he... I love that he just kept it quirky. He kept himself quirky. Like, I just find he wasn't... He never tried to be like, you know... He just kept him... He kept himself professional in terms of music, but I loved, you know, like, the fact that...
He's got purple hair and poodles.
Yeah, you know, like... Yeah, exactly. He accepted his quirks, you know. He didn't try to hide... them, you know, like to, you know, iron them out or anything. He just embraced. I think when I was younger, I just always appreciated people like that more than the, you know, straight cut sort of, you know, more like the Dave Weckles or something that are a bit more straighty 180 or something, like in terms of their projection of who they are.
I know what you're saying.
But yeah. As like a, you know, just, yeah. So, yeah, I'm, yeah, a huge fan of Josh Fries, as we all are, you know. Yeah.
Okay, so what's the rest of the year got in store for you after you get back from Blues Fest and that kind of stuff?
If I'm honest with you, I don't have that much on in the books. Like,
does that concern you?
No. Because I, yeah, no, it doesn't concern me. I just, I know something will come up, so, for whatever reason, or I would just, you know.
And you're happy to have the time, the free time? No, I wouldn't say free time. But.
No, it's never free time, but it's like, I don't know, like, it's not that it doesn't scare me, but it's like, I really enjoy playing, and so if I will, like, you know, I'll go look for a reason to play.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, it's never, I'll play anywhere and with anyone. If it's good, it's going to be, you know. So, I'm going to, now that I'm up where I am now, I'm going to start. I'm going to focus on sort of, I think, teaching for the next sort of year. I'm going to get, back into teaching. I started teaching when I was like 18, 19, early on. Milan got me teaching like quickly. Even he just you know, just told me to do it. And I was like, I'm not ready. He's like, yeah, you are, just do it. Like, just start basic with this. And so I started teaching sort of primary school kids and sort of got a sense of how to teach and stuff like that. I did it for like over 10 years. And then it wasn't, something happened where I was like, okay, I'm at that age now where I remember telling myself when I sort of quit, I was like, if I was going to take teaching seriously, it was almost like a fork in the road. If I would have to fully commit to teaching and the responsibility that it takes and like the real, you know, thing of it, I had to commit 100%, and I just was either too mature or not ready to do that, and I still had so much I wanted other things to do or something, or to, you know.
Yep.
But now where I am and sort of where I am in my life and sort of, yeah, I'm just like, I think it's time. I think I've got enough material, you know, to give back that way now. So probably the next 6 months I'll focus on setting up some teaching sort of in, and maybe some, like, I still haven't set up like a recording space where I am. So I want to just focus on that too.
Yeah, that's cool.
Do some more sort of, you know, recording. Yeah, just get that sorted, because it's like, yeah, that's, yeah, so certain attributes, I really just get my shit together on that side of things. But gig wise, yeah, there's no, like, I was busy for, like, since I moved up to Fingal, thankfully I had a lot of sort of touring gigs coming. I was playing with the Beautiful Girls as well, and just various sort of acts here and there. And so that sort of kept me going, kept me playing. But now, yeah, I think I'm just gonna, yeah, just focus on maybe practicing, recording, and, you know, teaching, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, you know, something worthwhile on tour has come along, you know. But yeah, I don't really, I've got to network more up there, because I'm so bad with networking and all that sort of stuff and meeting new sort of people, because I sort of grew up in the scene in Sydney, you know. So I never had to really do that. I just sort of played with, you know, everybody, or like, you know, hang out, you know. And so that's, everything sort of happened more organically, I guess, you know. But now that I'm up there, I feel like, yeah, there's so many great musicians up there, and so a lot of work as well. So I'm just maybe trying to, you know, just network more with musicians up in Queensland. And the circuit's big, so it's like, it seems to be like from basically Byron and everything in between to the sunny coast, and then sort of out west there's country gigs and stuff like that. So yeah, cool. There's plenty of people to meet and play, great musicians. We're so, like, I love when just meeting great players and, you know, trying to, yeah, you know, blend and gel with them and sort of, you know. Yeah, I find that to me, I really cherish that a lot. Yeah, because we've got so many great players in Australia per capita than, like, anywhere else in the world, I reckon. It's amazing, man. You never know when you're going to meet motherfuckers, you know. It's like, it's amazing, you know. Yeah, so that's probably, I guess that's my plan, but yeah, plans never go. I'm not much of a planner. I just sort of go with the flow.
Just go with it.
It's too hard. So I just like to cruise, you know.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
Awesome, brother. All right, Carlos Adura.
Can I say, before we stop, I just want to thank you, Steve, for doing this, and for, like, all the people and all the friends that you've done, and just to shine a light on all the musicians that you've put on. They're all, special people, and I'm very honored to be on this. So, yeah, thank you so much for what you do. Yeah,
thank you, brother. Appreciate it, man.
No worries, man.
Yeah, it's just great to sit and hang with you.
Yeah.
I've been trying to do this for a long time, eh?
I know. And I just, Well, we did it, though.
I'm glad we did it. Yeah.
And I was,
Yep, so I appreciate it, and I appreciate you, bro. So
likewise.
Look after yourself, man.
You too, brother.
All right, brother.
All right.
See you, man.
See you, brother.
Yo, it's Stevie here. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you dig the Gig Life podcast, please subscribe, share, leave a review. Please follow us on Instagram and TikTok. You can send me a message if you have an idea for a guest or if you just want to say hello. This podcast is free, costs you nothing. But if you find the value in the Gig Life podcast, you can leave a tip or a donation. Links are in the show notes on your app. That's it for me for now. Catch you next time, guys. Cheers.